Imagine a successful Google executive who seemingly had it all. Wealth, status, a dream job at Google X, working on moonshots to change the world. Yet despite these achievements, Mo Gadot found himself profoundly unhappy. The Egyptian-born engineer had reached a breaking point in 2001, looking in the mirror at a stranger he no longer recognized. Rather than accepting this state, he did something remarkable. He applied his analytical engineering mind to decode happiness itself. The result was a mathematical model for happiness that transformed his life and the lives of hundreds around him. This formula would face its ultimate test when tragedy struck, the unexpected death of his beloved 21-year-old son Ali during a routine appendectomy. Remarkably, even through this devastating loss, Gadot's happiness model held firm. Solve for Happy has since become a global phenomenon, endorsed by thought leaders like Sean Acor and Adam Grant, and sparked the hashtag 10 million happy movement aimed at making 10 million people happier in Ali's memory. As Arianna Huffington noted, this book will help you replace negative thoughts with positive ones, turn perceived failures into opportunities, and transform your life and the lives of those around you. Happiness isn't something we need to achieve. It's our natural condition when nothing interferes. Look at children playing in refugee camps with makeshift toys, laughing despite their circumstances. They embody our original programming, happiness as the default setting. Even as adults, we experience this truth in moments when nothing bothers us. We're simply happy without needing a reason. The problem begins when we misinterpret messages about deferring gratification. Many of us were raised to believe success precedes happiness. Study hard, work tirelessly, achieve security, and only then might happiness follow. But this premise is fundamentally flawed. Research by Diner and Easterlin shows that subjective well-being increases with income only up to about $70,000 annually, then plateaus. If anything, the causality works in reverse. Happiness makes people about 12% more productive and more likely to succeed. This insight led to Gadot's breakthrough. We shouldn't be trying to solve for success, hoping it leads to happiness. We should solve directly for happiness. To understand what this means, he created his happy list, documenting every instance when he felt genuinely happy, from simple pleasures like scratching his dog's chin to watching sunsets. This childlike approach revealed a pattern that became his happiness equation. Happiness equals events minus expectations. When you perceive events as equal to or greater than your expectations, you're happy. The crucial insight is that unhappiness doesn't come from events themselves, but from our thoughts about them. The blank brain test proves this. Recall something that made you unhappy, then briefly stop thinking about it by engaging your mind elsewhere. For that moment, your suffering disappears, even though nothing in reality has changed. When Gadot's wife totaled his beloved Saab but walked away unharmed, he was deliriously happy despite losing his car. The event remained the same, but his perspective made all the difference. This distinction between pain and suffering is vital. Pain, both physical and emotional, serves important purposes. It signals danger, prompts action, and naturally fades once it served its function. Suffering, however, is entirely self-generated. It occurs when we let emotional pain linger or resurface repeatedly through negative thought patterns. While pain is instructive, suffering offers no benefit whatsoever. Our thoughts determine our emotional states, creating a spectrum far more complex than simple happiness and sadness. Depending on our thinking patterns, we experience five distinct states: confusion, suffering, escape, happiness, and joy. Confusion feels like being trapped in quicksand, surrounded by fog that blurs vision and judgment. This state stems from illusions we've accepted since childhood that prevent us from seeing reality clearly. The illusion of time exemplifies this. We feel constantly stressed by time's relentless pace, unable to slow or stop it. We suffer when negative thoughts take hold and we allow them to linger. This tendency stems from our evolutionary programming. Our ancestors' survival depended on quickly identifying threats. Their brains erred on the side of caution, considering worst-case scenarios and processing information swiftly rather than accurately. This survival programming persists today, causing us to give excessive attention to events that don't deserve it. We often mistake fun for happiness, using weapons of mass distraction like partying, drinking, or shopping to escape difficult thoughts. Fun temporarily mimics happiness by switching off incessant thinking, returning us briefly to our default childlike state. However, when the pleasure fades, negative thoughts rush back, prompting us to seek more intense experiences, creating an addiction cycle. Fun can be beneficial when used wisely, as an emergency off switch for negative thoughts, but it's only a temporary escape, not a destination. Happiness emerges from the right thought, one that aligns with reality and positively solves the happiness equation. Rather than directly pursuing happiness, we should focus on stopping suffering, which naturally restores our default happy state. Joy represents complete immersion in life as it actually is, a state of flow with everything life presents. This creates uninterrupted happiness beyond conventional description. Joy emerges from deeply understanding life's patterns from a broader perspective. When we grasp that life always behaves as it always has and always will, we develop realistic expectations. To reach lasting happiness, we must address 6 grand illusions that keep us in confusion, fix 7 blind spots that distort our judgment, and hang on to 5 ultimate truths. We all have an incessant voice in our head that rarely stops chattering, worrying about the future, criticizing us, arguing and debating. The first revolutionary insight is recognizing that this voice is not you. To observe something, you must be outside it, just as we couldn't see Earth until astronauts sent back pictures from space. If you can hear a voice speaking in your head, you and that voice must be separate entities. This voice is simply your brain, an incredibly complex machine with more neurons than computers in the entire internet. Unfortunately, most of us never learn to optimize its use. The brain's core function is ensuring your body's safety and survival. When external threats were constant in early humanity, this functionality was vital. For immediate threats, your brain doesn't consult you, it simply acts. For less urgent decisions, it uses 2 different approaches: System 1, fast, instinctive, emotional, and System 2, slower, deliberative, logical. Since humanity's beginning, our brains have assumed full responsibility for our existence. When survival was more tenuous, we accepted our brains as undisputed leaders. But this arrangement isn't necessarily justified today. While your brain excels at mechanical functions without conscious thought, you should be in full control when it comes to thinking. Our brains produce 3 distinct types of thought: insightful, problem-solving; experiential, focused on tasks; and narrative, chatter. MIT studies reveal insightful thinking happens in 2 right brain regions, with solutions appearing up to 8 seconds after background processing. Incessant thought activates midline brain regions, while present moment focus activates different areas. Unlike autonomous bodily systems like your heartbeat, your brain is a controllable device. You can direct what it thinks about, how it thinks, and even command it to stop thinking altogether. 4 techniques can help tame your thoughts. Observe the dialogue, watch thoughts come and go without resistance, observe the drama, acknowledge emotions without resistance, bring better thoughts, replace unhappy thoughts with happy ones, and shut the duck up, silence mental chatter by flooding your brain with sensory information. With practice, you can develop an on-demand off switch for all thought, a joy like no other. Remember, you are not the voice in your head. When people realize they aren't their thoughts, relief quickly gives way to confusion. If I'm not the voice in my head, then who am I? This fundamental question reveals how we spend our lives serving an image of ourselves that doesn't resemble who we truly are. To discover who you are, first determine who you're not using 2 tests, the perception test, if you can observe something, you are not that thing, and the permanence test, if a quality changes while you remain unchanged, that quality isn't you. Your body isn't you, it's merely a vehicle that constantly changes. 50 to 70 trillion cells make up your body, with millions replaced every second. Red blood cells live 4 months, skin cells just weeks. Your entire physical form regenerates every few years, failing the test of permanence. Similarly, you're not your emotions. They change. Beliefs. They develop. Name. It can change. Tribal affiliations, family relationships, achievements, or possessions. You are the observer, the awareness that witnesses everything around you. You've never actually seen yourself because you are not an object to be seen. You are the one who sees. This understanding brings freedom. When you identify with your true self rather than your possessions, status, or even your body, nothing in the physical world can truly harm you. The ego, not arrogance, but your sense of identity, is the mask we wear that causes suffering. We're born without ego, living fully in the present moment. The transformation begins when we learn language and names. From mommy to your own name, you gradually develop the concept of I, me, mine, turning a single letter into the absolute center of existence. Once we adopt masks to reinforce our egos, we spend our lives playing roles. The powerful executive, the mom, the artist, the patriot. Each role comes with a complete package. Look, dress code, language, peer group, enemies, topics, and expressions. We become actors cutting and pasting from TV, eventually believing our own performances. To find your authentic self, remove the ego's layers like a Russian matryoshka doll. Literally undress. Stand before a mirror and examine everything you're wearing or using. Does it serve basic utility or your self-image? When stripped of these accessories, you return to that little child with nothing but a diaper. Even your body isn't truly you. You're the one observing it. Perhaps the deepest part of the illusion of self is believing you're the center of the universe, that good things happen because you've earned them and bad things happen to annoy you. We're each supporting actors in thousands of other people's movies while starring in just one. Every step we take impacts countless lives in ways we'll never know. If the author could make one change to profoundly impact humankind, he would eliminate arrogance, particularly our obsession with being right. While knowledge has propelled civilization forward from stone tools to smartphones, our conviction that we truly know causes suffering and represents ultimate ignorance. What matters most isn't what you know, but how accurate your knowledge is. Even scientific knowledge suffers from ignoring unknown unknowns. Newton's laws of motion, once considered absolute truth, were later shown to be incomplete by Maxwell's thermodynamics, Einstein's relativity, quantum physics, and string theory. Human knowledge follows a cycle called DDAW, discovery, debate, acceptance, arrogance. We discover new information, debate until evidence seems to favor one side, accept that knowledge as fact, then become arrogant about our certainty, only to have the next wave of discovery prove us incomplete or incorrect. Even when our knowledge is accurate, it's insignificant compared to all there is to know. The universe is 96% dark matter and energy about which we know little. We've explored less than 10% of our ocean's volume. We understand only 3% of our DNA, arrogantly calling the rest junk DNA because we don't understand its purpose. The words we use to define concepts severely limit our knowledge. The word mango doesn't capture the experience of tasting one. We compress complex concepts into single words. Skyscraper simplifies countless designs and materials into one term. Abstract concepts like love or democracy get reduced to words that can't possibly contain their meaning. Knowledge isn't a prerequisite for happiness. Our default state before acquiring knowledge was happiness. In fact, false knowledge causes most unhappiness. We use what we believe to be true as input for our happiness equation. But when that knowledge proves false, suffering results. Similarly, we believe we control our money, careers, possessions, relationships, and health, but do we really? Banks can fail, taxes increase, inflation erodes savings. Companies go bankrupt, layoffs happen. We lose possessions and loved ones, and everyone gets sick. In reality, only two things are ever under our total control: our actions and our attitude. Planning and attempting control isn't wrong, it's our reaction when unexpected things happen that derails us. Instead of trying to exert more control when plans change, we should view the new situation with fresh perspective and use unforeseen events to our advantage. Like in algebra, where irrelevant parameters are canceled from equations, we should cancel out circumstances we can't control and solve life's equation with what remains. Everyone has fears, even those who hide them well. Fear is the granddaddy of all illusions, restricting freedom and ruling lives regardless of status or power. The first step to overcoming fear is admitting its existence and recognizing its extent. Fear manifests in various forms. Anxiety stems from lingering fears, frustration from fear of failure, disgust from fear of harm, grief partially from fear of life after loss, embarrassment from fear of rejection, envy from fear of inadequacy, and pessimism from fear that life is out to get you. Every fear originates from a conditioned response that persists even when the original threat no longer exists. While some fears have clear names and triggers, acrophobia, claustrophobia, nyctophobia, many remain hidden and undefined, making them harder to confront. These include fears of social rejection, resource scarcity, loss of freedom, failure, aging, and death. Most fundamentally, many fear discovering who they truly are. Our brain plays elaborate games to keep us under control, hiding the true source of our fears. Fear itself is merely a defense mechanism warning of potential harm, while pain is just a thought controlled by the brain, one that can be suppressed or even enjoyed under certain circumstances. The brain creates a safe model by cataloging every possible threat, building layer upon layer of defenses that paradoxically make us more fragile. Many become resigned to suffering, believing it's inevitable. Like elephants restrained by flimsy chains they could easily break, but don't because of early conditioning, we remain trapped by exaggerated fears. Fear only paralyzes and blurs judgment. Life isn't conspiring against us, it simply wants to be experienced in all its flavors. To conquer fear, one must confront it directly through the interrogation, a series of questions. What's the worst that can happen? Let your mind explore all possible negative outcomes. So what? Realize the consequences aren't life-ending. How likely is it? Assess probability. Is there anything I can do now to prevent this scenario? Turn fear into action. And can I recover? Recognize that even worst-case scenarios are survivable. Then shift focus to the positive with, what will happen if I do nothing? And what is the best-case scenario? Life tests us repeatedly with our fears until we face them. When Gaudat's son Ali died, he experienced his greatest fear, which paradoxically freed him from all fear. He describes this as dying before you die, reaching a state where you understand that since everything will eventually be gone, there's nothing you truly have to lose. Our brains evolved hundreds of thousands of years ago in vastly different environments with different survival requirements. Features that once helped us survive now hinder our happiness as our brain continues to solve equations irrelevant to modern life. Through a vivid Stone Age hunting scenario, Gaudet illustrates seven critical brain features that evolved for survival: filters, focusing exclusively on potential threats; assumptions, drawing quick conclusions from limited data; predictions, anticipating imminent danger; memories, recalling past threats vividly; labels, categorizing situations rapidly; emotions, triggering fight or flight responses, and exaggeration, amplifying potential dangers. Research shows we think negative thoughts 60 to 70% of the time, up to 35,000 daily, give greater weight to negative information when making decisions, dedicate more brain resources to processing negative information, remember negative traits more easily, and respect negativity as a sign of intelligence. This negativity bias exists because our brain prioritizes survival over happiness, constantly scanning for threats like a diligent lawyer anticipating problems. Our brain filters reality constantly. When watching movies, we become oblivious to surroundings. The selective awareness test demonstrates this. People counting basketball passes miss a gorilla walking through the scene. What we filter out is orders of magnitude more than what we let in, making the brain's story always incomplete. After filtering out most of reality, our brain assumes what's missing. This happens even at the physical level with visual perception. Our anatomical blind spots are filled in by the brain based on surrounding details. Adelson's checkerboard illusion demonstrates how squares of identical shade appear different because our brain assumes what they should look like based on expected patterns. Our minds connect minimal data points to establish trends, then project fictional scenarios through extrapolation. These predictions often lay the path to make themselves happen, yet we treat these brain-generated possibilities as facts, destroying our happiness over events that haven't even occurred. Our brains blend current perceptions with past memories, contaminating present reality. We assume current situations will fail because similar past attempts did, ignoring crucial differences in circumstances. These contaminated perceptions become new memories, creating an endless loop that progressively distorts reality with each cycle. Labels are potent memory shortcuts that sacrifice accuracy for speed. Our brains create quick access codes by removing context and details, automatically associating Middle Eastern men with beards as terrorists, rainy days as miserable, and exotic cars as fast. Emotions make us human but can impair our judgment when blended with logic. Despite worshiping rationality and hiding emotions in professional settings, we typically make decisions based on emotions first, then gather supporting data. Our brains follow the principle, you can never be too careful, exaggerating perceptions to grab our attention when the truth isn't compelling enough. This peak shift phenomenon affects all species. Lab rats prefer increasingly exaggerated rectangles. Peacocks prefer males with larger tails. To debug our brain's code, we must recognize specific patterns. Filtering, when our brain summarizes complex events too simply. Assumptions, marked by phrases like I think rather than I saw. Memories, past tense thoughts. Predictions, future tense statements. Labels, snappy judgments. Labels, snappy judgments, emotions, marked by I feel or I hate, and exaggerations, using words like huge or never. The final section explores five ultimate truths that helped Gaudet find joy and survive the tragedy of losing his son Ali, now change, death, love, and the grand design. These truths provide a framework through which events, however harsh, seem expected and therefore meet expectations, keeping the happiness equation permanently solved. The first truth, now is real, examines why most people live in there and then rather than here and now, causing unnecessary suffering. Research reveals that regardless of activity, people are noticeably happier when fully present in the moment. Even thinking pleasant thoughts about other times makes us less happy than being fully present. Awareness isn't something we need to create, it's our default state. The challenge is that modern life keeps us constantly doing rather than being. Full awareness requires no effort, it's our natural state when we stop doing and simply be. The Taoist concept of Wu Wei, non-doing, illustrates this principle. Like a wise farmer who provides water and sunlight, but then leaves the plant alone to grow. The second truth, change is constant, reminds us that from one second to the next, our world transforms so dramatically that no two moments in history have ever been identical. Our attempts to control these endless changes inevitably lead to disappointment and exhaustion. Rather than trying to manage life's million variables like switches in an impossible cockpit, we should seek balance. Every factor in life behaves like a pendulum, naturally seeking its equilibrium point. Our culture values ambition and constant comparison, teaching us to measure worth by how much we achieve relative to others. This looking up mentality guarantees disappointment, as there will always be someone who's done better. A healthier approach is to look down, appreciating what you have by recognizing the billions who have less. The third truth explores love, distinguishing between conditional love, which is based on reasons, I love because, and therefore temporary and ultimately leads to suffering, and unconditional love, which has no preconditions, expectations, or demands. Unconditional love is the only genuine emotion not triggered by mental processes. Its true joy comes from giving it, not receiving it. Love follows its own economic principle. The more you give, the more returns to you. The fourth truth confronts death directly. Western cultures avoid discussing death, while many others celebrate it. Death isn't an event, but a process that begins at birth. Every minute, millions of your cells die, 150 million while reading this chapter, including 2,000 irreplaceable brain cells. Death is essential to life. It's an indispensable part of the food chain, sustaining every species. Without death, there wouldn't be life. When death comes, you'll leave everything behind: wealth, loved ones, possessions. So why hold on so tight? Life is mathematically a zero-sum game. We arrive with nothing and depart with nothing. Everything given must eventually be taken away. This truth can be liberating rather than depressing. If nothing is truly mine, then nothing can be lost. I can enjoy life fully as a rental, appreciating everything while it lasts, then letting go when it's time. The final truth explores the grand design, whether our universe is the result of randomness or intelligent design. Gaudat approaches this question analytically, stripping away religious legends and focusing on probability. He demonstrates mathematically that the complexity of our universe, from protein folding to species development, makes random creation astronomically improbable. He concludes that accepting a grand design brings freedom and joy, allowing us to surrender to a design beyond our comprehension.